Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. And today's guest is John Cameron from the Cameron Law Offices.
Morning, Tom. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning.
John, thanks for being with us again. Today, we're going to talk about, from an investor's viewpoint, mortgage and debt acquisition. A lot of activity in the marketplace today, a lot of paper out there, and probably a lot of opportunity for investors if they have the wherewithal to go out and take advantage of that and buy some paper at pretty good discounts.
Well, you know, in other times we've gotten together, we've talked about all the problems related to, you know, commercial loans and loans secured by real estate. And, you know, both from a lender and a borrower's perspective, there's a lot of pain out there, and they're trying to work through those relationships. But one of the, you know, they always say that the other side of crisis is opportunity. And we're seeing that, where we think the beginning stages of some individuals and groups taking advantage of the opportunity that's out there with respect to commercial loans and commercial paper secured by real estate.
So they're smelling the opportunity to make some money. They've got some cash and credit and the ability to go out and buy some things. And they come to you and they say, John, we think there's an opportunity here. How do we go find it?
Yeah. The opportunity, Tom, is really a situation where as lenders try to shrink their balance sheets, and a lot of national lenders, you know, there's been a lot in the news about having to have these banks raise a lot of capital. One way to do that is to go out and sell stock and bring investors in. Another way to do it is to sell off some assets. And what do banks have as assets? They have loans that are secured by real estate is one of the assets they have. So we're seeing that a situation where our clients are going to these lenders and saying, you know, what do you have to sell? And the lender will provide a list of what they have out there. And these can range from anything from a loan that's really performing that they just feel that they, you know, they don't want to be in the market that long. Maybe the interest rate isn't what they'd like it to be. And they'll sell it at a discount. The discount will be less than an asset that might be in a lot of trouble and coming back. So if you kind of put the scale together, you've got a full building, whether maybe it's an apartment or office or retail center, that's the borrower's strong and the tenants are strong and the payments are coming in. That discount obviously is going to be less than a situation where there's a portfolio of, say, an empty industrial building or vacant land or something like that. So at the two extremes, you know, there are some performing things out there, but they'll be discounted, but less than some of these distressed assets. And we're one step away from buying the real estate. Can't stress enough that you're really stepping in the shoes of the lender.
So you actually, when you do this, you're going in and you're buying a mortgage that the lender has secured by some asset, and you're paying the lender less than 100 cents on the dollar. You're buying it at a discount, which serves to improve your return on investment beyond whatever the stated interest rate is. But you're stepping into the banker's shoes. Now you are the lender, and you're collecting the payments, and you have all the rights that the lender originally had according to the documentation. Is that right?
Sure. And you know, a number of our clients who have gotten involved in this are individuals who've developed and own real estate, commercial for rent real estate. And one of the things is stepping in this unique situation of not being the owner of the real estate but being the lender. You know, you are in a position where you're once removed, and you need to rely on that borrower to not only maintain the property and keep it rented, pay all the bills, and then send you the payment every month. So you need to look at, you know, a situation, you know, kind of the ideal situation is you have a strong borrower, a strong asset. Let's say it's a a well occupied apartment building, for example, and maybe that owner, the borrower of that building, might own several thousand other units in different locations. They know the business, they know how to operate, they've got low vacancies, so that you've got a situation where the cash flow is there to support the debt. You might also have a situation on the asset, which ideally you'd like to have, is where the borrower, this strong borrower, put their own money in the asset, as opposed to someone who maybe just refinanced and took all the equity out of the building. So you need to look at these things when you're determining what the discount should be. And in that situation, you know, you're hopeful that the borrower pays. And there's really three strategies here. One, the ideal situation is that the borrower, you buy it at a discount. The borrower pays all the interest at the interest rate that's stated on the note. And ultimately, when it comes due at some time down the future, they pay you off in full. You know, that's kind of the home run. You've got a great cash-on-cash return during the term of the loan, and at the end you get this, you get the discount in your hands. The second thing that could happen is that same scenario, yet they pay it early, which the investors love, because at that point they're getting the discount sooner and it increases their internal rate of return. And then the third one, obviously, that you need to, in your evaluating your underwriting for the discount and your long-term strategy, is what happens if they don't pay and you do have to take the asset back. Earlier in another podcast, we had talked about kind of these strategies for foreclosure, and you need to look at, you know, the time frame that might be involved. Of, you know, it may take you a year to get through the foreclosure process and deal with all the things that can come up in that. So you need to make sure you have reserves for that. But basically, the ideal situation is to underwrite it as if it's going to perform, see how that comes out, and then underwrite it as if, what would this asset be worth, you know, and we call it a terminable value. It may even be, when you're buying this debt, you should look also at what value would the asset support today if they had to go out and get refinanced. You know, maybe they owe $10 million on the property, but if they went out and got financing today, they could only get $7 million or something in that range. So you need to look at, okay, if this borrower, you know, where is this asset really at? So that's kind of finding the opportunity. Then the next thing is, what's the road for getting it under contract and closing on?
So when you're pricing that with the bank, and thinking about buying the mortgage, in the best case scenario, you get the discount, they prepay it early, you've got a great return on investment, it was a good investment, you're out. Worst case scenario, the borrower goes bad and you have to foreclose the property. Now you own the property. What are you going to do with it? You're going to refinance it, you're going to sell it. So you've got to, when you're pricing it, you have to consider best case, worst case, and then make sure you've got enough dry powder or enough cash to deal with either scenario.
That's right.
So how would I find out as an investor what blocks or what mortgages or what would be up for sale?
Well, you know, it comes up in many different ways. It's a lot of relationship driven. You know, our clients have a lot of relationships. They've been in the business of borrowing money for a long time and on assets like this. So it may come from, you know, a trusted relationship like that. You know, it may come from some type of broker that a number of real estate companies have gotten into the brokering this type of asset.
Okay, so if I find out that a bank that I know Tom's at is starting to sell mortgages, I'm going to make this personal now because I can understand.
Well, be careful, Sam.
And I and a friend get together and we have $5 million that we want to buy his building. And we...
Sold.
And he holds the note. So he would be paying us. We would be the lender. How would we find out from the bank, besides... Is it just the trusted advisor, how his terms are? Because, you know, Tom's buttoned up, so we know he's fine.
Right. Well, that's getting back to that, you know, looking at that strong borrower.
Yeah.
So now that's the scenario where we're in now.
I think what Sam's asking is you really have to go through the same type of due diligence as if you were going to buy a piece of commercial real estate anyway, don't you?
Right.
And is the bank going to disclose that information?
Well, Sam, what you had mentioned about buying the building, and again, you know, we're really buying the note at this point. We're not buying the real estate asset. We're taking the bank's position.
Right.
And usually what happens is that the bank, most lenders, whether they're local, national, or some type of conduit lender, had a really thorough process for both underwriting and documenting these loans. Now, in retrospect, the underwriting may, the property may not pencil out at a value that it did at the time the loan was originated. But in most cases, the documentation is very thorough and very orderly. So typically what you'll see is that they'll, subject to a confidentiality agreement, provide you a list of documents that they have and copies of those documents. So you can really review the loan file. And really what you're going to take from the lender is their interest, and they would deliver all those original documents to you when you paid them off and stepped in their shoes.
Okay. Now, John, if Sam was going to take an opportunity to buy the mortgage on my office building, would my lender be obligated to inform me of what was going on?
You know, you'd have to look. That would be one of the things that your loan agreement.
I'm not sure I want Sam to be my lender, but I'm just wondering what my rights might be in that kind of case.
Well, you know, again, that would really be dictated by your loan agreement as to whether it'd be highly unlikely they would need your consent. Can I say with absolute certainty that that would not be a term of your loan agreement? You may have required that when you did the loan. So typically you have a situation where they would probably just provide you notice that they've, you know, sold the loan and you have a new loan servicer, just as, you know, many people have experienced with their home loans.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was kind of looking at is, you know.
I'm going to keep an eye on you, Sam. Now, a lender, if Sam and her partner approached a local bank and said, we want to invest in some real estate, we'd like to buy a mortgage, the lender could sell something that was in trouble, or the lender could sell something that was performing if they wanted, as you say, to reduce the assets and improve their balance sheet. So if she finds a banker that was willing to talk about real estate mortgages, what's the likelihood that she could step up and buy my mortgage?
Well, I mean,
this is scaring him. This is so good.
I'm getting nervous, John. We're going to hire you a little later.
Right. It's really a situation, you know, it's willing buyer, willing seller. I mean, if, you know, the bank may say, we might be interested in selling it, but we need to get this out of it. And if that's something that it pencils out for the investor or the investor group, then the next thing is that the investor group would typically put together a letter of intent saying, here's, you know, non-binding letter that, we've also talked about letters of intent. There's, I want to say it's non-binding generally, but there are, you know, there can be binding provisions in it. But basically the letter of intent would detail the terms under which the investor group was willing to buy that mortgage. And, you know, it would identify things as price and closing time and a due diligence period.
Once again, it's an outline of the terms of the deal.
Right.
Okay. So Sam presents that to the bank and says, I want to buy this building and here's what I'll pay you for it. And if the bank agrees to that letter of intent, what's the next step?
Well, then typically what would happen is, you know, it depends on kind of the seller. Some sellers are much more organized than others, and some may have, even before you presented the letter of intent, may have had you sign a confidentiality agreement and provided you all the documents in the package. Some of these loans are sold by...
Sam's getting naughty now.
Sam's going to go through all your loans, but you have a situation where the some of these are handled by auction. They're, mm-hmm. You know, they're not just knocking on a door, okay. But they may have hired a brokerage firm, and the brokerage firm contacted several investor groups and said, okay, in 2 weeks on this date, we want you to put your bid in. In that case, you wouldn't have the letter of intent, but you'd have basically your bid sheet, which would then be, you know, you would go to a purchase agreement later. But in advance of that, you may have already had a look at all the documentation on the loan already.
The perspective of sorts that shows you the building and the appraised value and the loan and so forth.
You may even have seen the loan agreement, the security agreements, the mortgage, the leases, the operating statements. You might have seen all those things. And the expectation there is that, and what we're seeing is that, you know, unlike a piece of real estate where we might get under purchase agreement and we'd, now we're going to hire somebody to go through the building and do this and do that, that's already occurred. You know, someone already bought the real estate. Somebody already put a loan in place. So the lender's perspective in some of these situations where they're very organized is saying, listen, we'll let you look at everything even before you put a bid in. But, you know, we expect you to perform not in 60 days, but how about in 2 weeks, we want you to pay us off. So the flow on some of these things that are happening, the pace of it is very accelerated. So it takes in some cases.
Takes the form of an auction in that case, and here's everything you need to know, and you bid, and you've got 2 weeks to close, and we're done.
Right. I mean, these lenders are, in some cases, certainty of close. The time frame of closing is even more important to them than the pricing.
Which now, also leads to the increase in opportunity, right?
Right.
Okay.
I mean, if you can show an ability to perform and have some strength and get the seller with some assurance, like I say, price is less important to them. You know, all things being equal, obviously they're not going to take 10% less on the on their loan, but they might take 2, 3, or 4% less if they know that they can get this deal closed in a relatively quick period of time with some certainty that the investor group will perform.
So that'd be a scenario where a large bank or insurance company, maybe a regional bank, decided we need to clean out 20 of these loans, and they go hire a broker and say, let's put together these packages, let's create an auction, let's get these loans off the books, and we might be willing to accept a little less than if we were dealing one-on-one just to get this done and clean up our balance sheet.
Right. And, you know, in the scenario I just gave you with that accelerated close, that's kind of a unique situation. The one you just described where, you know, you're dealing with a local, national, or lender, or bank, rather, or insurance or pension fund, they're probably going to work with you more on, you know, okay, here's a letter of intent, here's a purchase agreement, because you're going to want some warranties and representations concerning the status of that loan. I mean, is it current? Are there any defaults in the loan? Have you received any notices from the borrower that some of his tenants are going to vacate? You want to know you're going to hop in that lender's shoes, and they want to sell the loan. Now, they may be motivated to sell the loan because of global changes in their balance sheet they're trying to accomplish, or they may be trying to sell the loan because of some specific issue with the borrower or the borrower's tenants. You want to make sure that you've evaluated all those things.
Which one is it?
Right.
Well, John, is there an opportunity if Sam and her partner approach the bank and they've got a loan where the lending criteria has changed and they want to attract some fresh capital to that loan, is there an opportunity for her to go in and put up some extra capital and keep the lender in the deal at a lower amount secured by the asset? Can she get in the middle of that?
You mean the borrower?
Can Sam get in between me and my lender?
He's going to make sure he knows all about it now.
Well, you're kind of...
an interesting thought. Yeah,
you're kind of hitting on an issue that has two sides to it. One is that, in some situations, these lenders have gone to the borrower and said, we'd like to sell your loan, or we'd like to have you pay it off. Or
pay it down.
Pay it down. And that really is a renegotiation of the loan. We've seen some lenders reluctant to go and offer the discount to their borrowers. They'd rather sell it to a third party because the perception is that all their borrowers will show up the next day.
Looking for the same thing.
Looking for the same day. And that, you know, obviously the idea is to sell a few loans and stabilize the bank, not to discount every loan in the bank. So, or the portfolio that's being held. So, the idea that someone might come in and on a specific loan and buy that down or do something is feasible, but to get a discount can be more challenging. The other side of it is that you know talking about potentially financing these. There have been some other banks that would potentially finance your acquisition. If you look at, let's just use a $10 million. Loan out there that maybe could be bought at, let's say 70 some cents on the dollar. And then the investor group comes in and says, okay, we'll buy it down to 40 cents on the dollar. Would another lender loan them the money to do that? Potentially they would. And in some scenarios, you may look at the borrower, the seller, the lender who's selling it and say, if we pay you this for it and we bring this much cash, would you lend us
the differences. And still keep the same security.
They would take a pledge of those types of things. So, again, it raises capital for them. Your discount obviously may not be as deep, but those are, these are all things that are starting to evolve and trying to figure out this market is really starting to work and mature.
So I go in, I get a discount from the bank because this is a block of assets in a certain zip code, let's say, that they just want off the books. Tom finds out that this is what I'm doing, and he says, well, I can get 70% pulled together, and he's the borrower. I'll just buy the mortgage myself.
And that we've seen that happen. We've seen borrowers go in and buy their own mortgage. The only issue I've heard that we've seen lenders who have said, absolutely not, we're not going to sell to our borrowers. And the risk is that, you know, that's not the only loan they have in their books. And, you know, that everyone...
That's what you were saying. Everybody would want the same deal.
Right. And whether they had a legal right to require that is a whole other issue that, you know, we haven't seen addressed at this point. But I can see why lenders would say, you know, we don't want to discount them to our borrowers because where does it stop?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they can sell them off to a third party, and then that third party might go and say, hey, we bought a discount. We'll let you pay us off at a discount. And, you know, they got something for getting in the middle. And that's kind of what you were talking about, Tom.
A little bit. But I'll keep an eye on Sam, and I'm close to my lender, so we're in good shape. And I want to clarify one thing. There's no lender that would ever pick a zip code and say, I'm going to get
okay.
All
I know. That was totally out there.
I know that was an accident. The lenders are prohibited from doing that.
Yes, so, I know.
So they're not going to do that. Okay, can we walk through that acquisition a little bit more? We've got to the letter of intent. Now we're going to work on a purchase agreement. Say this is not the scenario where Sam's buying my building. Now this is a scenario where an investor group came to a bank. They've got a commercial real estate loan that they want to sell. We've got a letter of intent with the terms. How do you go about finishing up that deal?
Well, the next step from going from the letter of intent would be to put a purchase agreement together. And, you know, the purchase agreement would be more detailed than the letter of intent. It would identify not only the price, but it would identify, you know, the earnest money that was going to be put down. You typically would identify a title company and escrow company to handle the transaction for you. And then also the biggest thing is the warranties and representations concerning the not only the status of the loan but the underlying asset. And it gets a little tricky because there's certain, you know, from investor group, they want to have assurances not only from the borrower or from the lender who's selling it, but if you think it through, if a bank was going to do a loan for a borrower, not only would they get, you know, certain assurances from that borrower, they would want certain assurances from that borrower's tenants. And this is where the push back and forth comes, is that the lender wants to kind of limit their warranties and reps as much as possible, and they usually don't want the investor group talking to the borrower or the borrower's tenants. So the people that are involved in these, there's a certain amount of risk that's involved with respect to that, not having their arms completely around the asset or the borrower, and maybe have to kind of rely on the documentation that was provided by the lender. So that's, you know, that's one of the things where you need to get a high degree of comfort with the documentation that you're provided by the lender, and having them make warranties and reps regarding the accuracy of that.
Mm.
So hoping that the lender had good documentation when he first closed the deal, and that he's got copies of the leases, and he's got assignments or rents, and he did his title search, and he's got his title insurance, and you're hoping that they had a good closing and a thorough closing and documented everything very, very well.
Right. We, you know, typically we see that the loan was documented, you know, very well. I mean, these are very sophisticated lenders. They know that part of the business. You know, where we have a high degree of interest beyond, I mean, obviously we want to look at all that. We have a high degree of interest is from the date of closing to today, you know, which is probably more accurately would be a servicing file. You know, what kind of correspondence has been back and forth between the lender and the borrower?
Especially if you get something that was signed in 1992 or 98 or...
Yeah, you know, most of these would be newer than that, but even if it was 18 months ago, you know, the world changes so quickly that you want to know what kind of correspondence was back and forth. What's the loan service history?
Yep, yep.
And what are there any defaults? You know, you don't only have to not pay to be in default under a loan. You know, these loans have covenants in them that require, you know, a certain debt coverage ratio of, you know, they have to bring so many dollars of revenue in, you know, for every dollar of debt service, they may have to have $1.25 of revenue.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and with vacancy, you can fall below that and be in technically in default. Or maybe you're supposed to post a letter of credit if certain things happen. And so there can be other defaults out there that you need to deal with. Doesn't mean you don't buy the loan, but you got to factor it into your pricing, and you got to figure out, okay, how are you going to deal with that default with the borrower once you own that loan?
What do I do about the difference in valuation of the property?
Well, as far as
property prices have gone down.
Well, you know, that's one of the issues that we talk about on the pricing side of it, is that that the terminal value. Maybe we say, okay, and also there might be a technical default because they have to be at 80% loan to value at all times, and maybe the property's fallen, and maybe they're at 5% or less.
There could be a question on how they've maintained the property since they put the loan on the books too.
Sure, and you know they're as far as the value as well. So you need to make sure that's kind of the third leg of the underwriting, the terminal value. What's the asset worth today? Mm-hmm. So you would never want to pay more for the loan than the asset is worth today.
So a lot of details.
Right, and it's you know, it's a process that is there's a great opportunity there, but there is a process you have to be you have to stick to your discipline and make sure that you execute on all of the due diligence items in the in the review.
So what I'm hearing today, John, is quite an opportunity coming with the state of the markets today. And if you're an investor and you've got cash and you've got access to credit, as you say, you could buy the note and hope it gets paid off early and have a pretty good return on investment, but you better be prepared to foreclose on the property and own the property. So what you're telling me in this process where we're looking at mortgage and debt acquisition is you really have to do the same kind of due diligence and the same kind of workup on it as if you were buying a property or the asset that's securing the note.
You sure do. And even another discipline of is if you were going to be a bank and lending on it and making sure that, you know, we didn't get into this, but some of these acquisitions are complex because there's a senior piece of debt and a junior piece of debt, and there's a participation agreement. And you need to make
another
sure
podcast.
You need to make sure that you're in compliance on that. So there can be a level of sophistication that goes, you know, well beyond what we're talking about today. But the opportunity is there. There are people executing and preparing to execute to take advantage of this opportunity.
So they need to do a real good job of due diligence and understand the bank's position or the lender's position and their rights and their responsibilities under that if they're going to buy the notes and be prepared to own the property in a worst case scenario.
Right.
Terrific, John. This has been a fascinating discussion of investment opportunities in today's market. I'm Tom Lyons, and for my co-host Sam Zordich and our producer, Jorgi Jorgensen, I'd like to thank John Cameron from the Cameron Law Office for being with us today to discuss mortgage and debt acquisition on this segment of todaysbusinessradio.com.
Thank you.
Thanks.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.